Everybody, welcome to Sonic Talk number 371. This is going to be the last one for a little while, well, a week. There won't be one next week because I'm going on holiday. I'm following the rain around Europe, by all accounts, but by the looks of things. So what the heck, but, you know, it'd be nice a few days off. So anyway, I want to say thank you very much. Remember, obviously, this week we have a sponsor. Isotope are the sponsors. And as with every week, you can win a copy of one of their software applications. This week it's Break Tweaker, which is designed by BT, a famous glitch musician, and made by Isotope. Details come later. That's known as a tease. And if this is the first time you've watched us or listened to us, you can also watch this live video stream on YouTube or live as it happens, which is sonicstate.com/live at 4 p.m. every Wednesday. But also, if you have discovered this on YouTube, hit the subscribe button, because then you'll be notified every time we upload something. This isn't the only thing we do. We have lots of reviews, news. In fact, I posted a review of the Roland IRA SH-101 plug-out just this very morning. So you would have been notified of that if you'd subscribed. Now, you'll have to stay here and watch it, because you should be watching this, not that. But you can queue it up for later. You get the rough idea anyway. I'm rambling. I need a holiday. That's clear. I'm going to go to this man here, Gaz Williams, who is joining us from Bristol in a sort of native Indian kind of headdress.
I was kind of thinking more New Orleans, Mardi Gras.
Okay. Explain yourself, sir. I mean, it's lovely. It's lovely. You don't need to explain yourself at all, of course. It's great to see you there. Yeah, we haven't seen you for a little while. You've been busy, right?
Yeah, it's been silly busy season. Lots of festivals. Lots of performances, lots of studio work as well, which hasn't been so good because it's been beautiful weather and I've been sort of embroiled in lots of studio work, which is always a bit irritating.
Yeah. Well, have you had air conditioning?
But, no.
Shame.
Well, in some places maybe, yeah. But one of the things I wanted to show, actually, this is what I've got just by here, because this is a fairly... something that I've just recently got hold of it's because it's a guitar pedal, ostensibly. It's an Ibanez Echo Shifter ES2, I think it might be the
I've
model.
Never seen that. It looks a bit like a Eurorack module.
Yeah, it's nice because actually it's got nice wood cheeks on there, and they're not plastic, they are wood cheeks on there, and it's got quite moogie sort of dials, and then the time is controlled either by this nice slidey fader. Or there is actually like a digital component. It's all Bucket Brigade. But there's a tap tempo.
Sweet.
There's a tap tempo switch on there as well. So it seems to be, and it's got a whole second of delay, which is quite cool for Bucket Brigade.
It is. Is that a new thing?
We're trying to work out why. It's very dark. The repeats are very dark. So maybe that's how they get such a...
So is it a new model, or is it because it looks...
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it's a new model. I've got here, I can demonstrate.
Go on.
What else? okay. But it's got a couple of cool, funky features. Like, so it's got a modulation, but it's only got depth and on and off. There's no rate control. So I think it's somehow... related to the... Let's put loads of it on. Is that coming through okay?
Yeah, it's kind of wobbly, bendy stuff.
Yeah. And then you can... But then there's an oscillation switch on here as well.
Well, like it needs more bend. Yeah.
So the oscillation switch makes it... it sort of just, I don't know, it sort of distorts the, or it just, I think it just cranks up the gain in the feedback. So switch that in.
Wow. Does it work like a regular delay as well, or is it only for complete madness?
It's quite nice, you know, you can do really nice short slapbacky kind of things. Wow.
Oh, really? Hang on. I don't believe you.
The tap tempo is a bit odd in that it only takes two taps.
Ah, right.
And there's a green little LED, and it goes red when you tap it in and red when you tap it out.
Okay.
I have managed to sync it up. It does get out of control very easily.
Well, the thing is about BBDs is they do that. Is it expensive?
It's not, no. It's about, I think I paid about 90 quid for it.
Oh, right, sweet.
So it's pretty cool. I just really like the styling of it.
It is
well.
Very nice. It's got that, I tell you, it reminds me a little bit of the, what's that thing that we did recently with Ed? Gosh. I forget now. They do a delay as well. It's a filter delay type thing. And I can't remember what it's called. But yeah, I've completely forgotten.
Incidentally, I was in a music festival a couple of weeks ago called Secret Garden Party. And this guy came up, tapped me on the back. He said, "You guys?" And it was Ed.
Yeah, that's right. He said he met you. Ed, for those who don't know, Ed is one of our reviewers. He's doing a bunch of modular stuff for us. And he did the thing that I can't remember what it was. But yeah.
That was a very bonkers festival, though, Secret Garden Party. It's kind of a really expensive festival in terms of its, I think it's about the same sort of ticket price as Glastonbury. But there's not a lot of big acts on the bill. It's just a big, expensive party. Prince Harry was there, apparently, off his
head. I see.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Well, Gaz, I'm glad you made it, and I'm glad you are talking to us, and we'll hear a lot more from you now. I guess I should introduce my rather studious next guest. This is Mr. Dave Spears. He seems to be reading some old literature. Right. What's that? Is that a Tascam? TIAC?
Yeah, I'm just genning up on this newfangled tape technology.
Ah, beautiful. You can't beat a bit of old literature. You know what? I used a 144 for my first ever demo.
Oh, okay.
In a band I was in called Panic Stations, very long time ago. Dave Spears, of course. Dave Spears, of course, G4 Software synth collector in his very well lit and above ground synth cave. It's a sort of virtual synth cave, but it's got real synths in it.
Synth treehouse.
A synth tree. Yeah, I like the sound of that. That's kind of cool. Synth treehouse. Now there's a concept for a museum. So how have you been, Dave? You well?
Yes, thank you. Busy.
Excellent.
I found a. I was exploring part of the lockup, and I found a filing cabinet that I hadn't looked at since 1991, by the evidence that was in it. So we have all these beautiful delights, such as the original MC4 brochure.
Oh, sweet.
The Boss C1 brochure, all the Simmons stuff, the SDS5 brochure, and corporate stuff on EMU, which is quite strange. And eMagic, remember them?
I do, yes. We had an eMagic 2-in 6-out or whatever it was, EMI MIDI audio. It was an audio interface, that sort of
the
thing.
The tagline was technology with soul. I don't know what happened to that over the years.
Yeah, I think there was an R put in the middle, in front of it somewhere, perhaps. They have their soul singers, and we have our soul singers, in the immortal words of Derek and Clive. I'm sure I've said that many times on the show. Anyway, if I forgot to mention, Gaz Williams, of course, is a professional bass player and hat-wearing dude, music producer. And you've been doing a lot of Cubase mix work, have you, at the moment?
Yeah. I've been doing an awful lot of Cubase work. And I've made this thing. I don't know, like, let's see if I can demonstrate this thing here. Is that the controller's there?
Oh, yeah.
And it's like on a board that I can lift off and take with me. I think I was just demonstrating it, talking about it the other day. But, it's got those CMC controllers on there. And, been enjoying that immensely, actually. I think it's...
You've been investing in a workflow and and using it a lot and tweaking it by the looks of it.
Definitely. And I mean, I did talk about it, I think, the last time I was on the show, but this kind of show and hide function, it's changed my workflow. And that basically is, it just, it's to do with the new visibility commands. And I've got them on shortcuts on one of the buttons on one of these devices.
You were saying about being able to kind of hide me. Yeah. I just want to say, Zen Artist has posted the best thing so far. I need a hard hat and Dave needs a cowboy hat. And then we've got the complete set.
That's perfect.
Yes. Maybe instead of the YMCA, if I play another couple of really bad, obvious copyright infringements from YouTube, we could be the DMCA. That's a special gag for the YouTube police handle chat in the chat room. I think, I don't know if we can see him there.
How do we do that? D? I don't know.
It's funny. I could switch. As you could tell, I'm rambling a bit because we haven't, you know, summer's here and there's generally less stuff going on. But we do have some news items, and this is the first of one of them. Let's see. What's this?
Hello.
Yes. This is at the Nürburgring Festival 2014, which I think is in Sweden. This is a few gentlemen from Teenage Engineering who are showing off their PO12. I'm not sure what the 12's for, because it's a 16-voice, 16-effect drum machine based on what looks like calculator technology. And by all accounts, it's rocking. I'll see if I can fast forward it till it's making some noise. Let's have a look. This is filmed by Cuckoo, who is a great sort of live streaming musician. Uses a lot of Swedish music hardware in his setup. Let's keep going. What's really cool about it, those two little knobs there, it's got parameter locking on all of the steps, so you can create some really mad stuff, as you can hear. But what a great idea. I mean, it just seems like a really interesting notion. I mean, no, because obviously, you know, Gaz, you've got another Teenage Engineering product, which we've seen, the OP1.
Sure.
And that is really expensive. And this, they're aiming at getting out at $50. Can you imagine it? I mean, I think they're even going to put a display on it and things.
Yeah. And I mean, it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because many people complain about the OP1 being really expensive, being toy-like. I always counter that by saying, you're only saying it's expensive because it's small. If you put all its functionality into like a full-size keyboard, you know, it would seem like good value for money, I think. So, the fact that they're aiming to try and bring us out for $50, which I guess UK prices would be about £35, maybe £35.
Be awesome, wouldn't it?
You know, yeah, fantastic. But I mean, you know, and I thought it sounded really cool. I really like the parameter locking kind of thing. I love the idea of the, you know, 16 effects that you can just quickly jump to. There's another video, isn't there, that you posted on Sonic, which has
got Cuckoo actually sort of playing a bit more on it. Yeah, that's right.
That's a very highly recommend that video if you haven't watched that already. To really get to understand what this thing is and what it's capable of. And it's quite interesting as well that it's so early days for this thing. It's not even, I mean, it's not going to be out until next year.
2015,
sometime.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then with the OP1, didn't we? It was...
Hello? Oh, we lost him. Come back, Gaz. What did I do? His connection's gone. No audio. He's frozen in that rather... brilliant. Anyway, get Dave. While we try and sort that out, we'll come back to Dave, who's reading a Simmons catalogue. Awesome. How very topical.
SDS-6, of all things.
That is even more...
That is hen's teeth rare, that, isn't it?
That really is, yeah. What do you think about this notion of kind of cheaper and cheaper? We're going to be looking at perhaps another drum machine later on, which is a little bit further up the food chain, but only just. It's a pretty interesting idea. I know you haven't got an OP1. I don't know if you ever had a hands-on with it.
I'd quite like... I've played on Gaz's. I would quite like one, but I'd have to invest quite a lot of time in it, I think, and there are other things that I've got a lot of time to invest in.
Yes, I know that feeling. But it sounded pretty good. I mean, it's got a tiny amount of memory.
Great.
Just getting Gaz's returned. There we go.
No idea what happened
on
there.
The price. Yep, very cool. Very cool price. I like that Cuckoo's demos. I like all his demos, actually.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, because I only just realised that he's actually... He must be Scandinavian of some sort, but he's got this kind of slight Australian twang to his you know, his accent as well. It's a very unusual selection of things. Sorry, Gaz, you were in mid-flow and then you froze.
Yep, no idea what happened then. Sorry, Nick.
Can you remember where you were? Because I certainly can't.
Just saying that the OP1 was trailed a long time before it actually came out.
Norwegian, and I think is.
It came out a number of years after it was meant to, wasn't it? So whether this will see some slippage, I don't know. But Teenage Engineering constantly surprise us with their unusual ideas that they put in, certainly into the OP1. So I think this is brilliant, and you know, it's a night in the pub, isn't it?
50 quid, yeah, really? Exactly. I mean, if they can bring it in for that price, then you know we could. I mean, because it looks like I missed it. It was you could do some really interesting things with the chat room. What was it? He said you could put your tongue across the contacts for a bit of extra interesting. Who was it who wrote that? I'm sorry, it's gone. But the other thing was you could make some. Yeah, you could do some drum triggers. You could do all sorts of things with it, and I think that's the, because they've been bringing out this kind of sound lab idea, haven't they, where you can hook things together. And I'm hoping they give it a little bit of connectivity, because that would be very cool if you can actually trigger those sounds. Because, I mean, obviously, I do like the notion of something that's self-contained, but I really don't like programming one-bar patterns. I think it leads to sort of tedium and repetition a little bit. But
looking at the design, I'm fairly sure that once it's kind of done, it's going to have 16... I reckon it'll have 16 accessible patterns. You hold pattern down and choose. I reckon that'll be the plan. That's my inkling. I'm not so keen on just the three preset tempos, though.
Ah, I didn't know that. That does seem like a bit of an oversight, yeah.
Yeah, so you got, what have you got? You got disco, you got hip-hop, disco, and techno. Just three preset tempos. I'd like to see that change.
Is that real?
Apparently so, yeah. That's perhaps a little bit. That might be a bit of a limitation. I mean,
that's actually printed on the circuit board as well. So I don't know if that is something they're going to maintain. But Cuckoo also says in the video, he says that the chip that it's running on isn't designed for audio. It's some sort of power management chip that they've somehow hacked, and this whole thing is running on something.
That's
the platform
awesome.
It's running on. So
Triplex in the chat room says it's 100, 120 and 140. Maybe external 6 will fix the tempo issue. That's Sonic 4249. And also Sonic 4249 appears to have a switch for multiple patterns, 2, 4 and 8, which would be kind of cool. But I mean, you know, it's impossible to say, but it sounds like that the basis of it is samples, isn't it? It's got a tiny little bit of sample RAM in it, or something's going on there, because I mean, some of those sounds do sound very glitchy when you start to tune them up and turn them down, but it's very hard to know until we get our hands on it.
One of the effects is quite funny, isn't it? It seems to turn it all into cowbells. What I was going to say as well, is it going to be just like that, a bare circuit board then? Is that the idea?
No, if you watch the whole of the introduction video, they're thinking about putting a small character, maybe 3-character display on it, or 2-character yeah. display plus some sort of a case around it.
Right.
But that's all we know. But, you know, as with the... actually, remember, I do remember, I can swallow my words, when this thing was first announced, do you remember, I vividly remember saying, I think the whole thing's a scam just to get them some design work. and yet they did produce it. And it does, you know, I mean, I'm sure that as a flagship does reflect the way that they get more, because they're a design house and they design other things like lights and all sorts of other bits and bobs. That's good. I seem to be getting a phone call. That's not a good time for a phone call. That's all right. I can turn that off. That's somebody who doesn't generally know that I'm not I'm not available at this time, so I'm going to leave that for now. Dave, what's that? Premier Drums?
Premier Drums, 1980-81.
So you're riffing on the drums percussion kind of notion. Pearl drums, yeah. They didn't, I remember 1981, didn't the Jam use Pearl drums? Who was that? Premier. Ah, that's Premier, yeah.
Premier. I wanted that one. I wanted the Soundwave kit because I figured if I had loads of drums, I might be getting any good.
Wow. Okay. Did you ever get a Premier drum kit?
I did. There's a couple of really fantastic stories behind that, but I won't go into those now.
Okay.
Hey, what were the...
Oh, he's gone again. Right. Back to me.
Perfect timing.
Yeah. It was an irrelevant question. But, yeah, so this thing is going to be... I'm pretty sure we're going to see it in force at NAMM 2015. So the whole thing is likely to kind of show up in full later on in the year. I guess we're talking six months. So they've got 6 months to get their stuff together. But it's got, I mean, the thing about it at the moment, that if you saw the image of it, it's got this like sort of blister pack sort of threading thing to put it on a shelf. So you could imagine at that sort of price, they could sell, you know, potentially tens, if not hundreds of thousands of that sort of thing if they get it right, couldn't they?
Yeah. I mean, from what I heard, I didn't explore the bid or all the peripheral kind of info too deeply, but from what I heard, it sounded great. That money, and it's really interesting because there's a Circuit Benders, DR55 board that's come out for a tenner. We're kind of looking at that going, oh, that might be quite good fun. But this looks like way more fun.
So do you how do you feel about, I suppose we could talk in terms of the notion of these kind of low cost things. Perhaps that we've got another drum machine we're going to have a look at, which again was announced some time ago, but has only just surfaced. And in a sort of, I'm not sure if it's a sneaky or a marketing way or whether it's a genuine mistake because it hasn't been taken off YouTube. But we'll come to that in a second because now I'm going to say thank you to our sponsors because I think that's probably a good idea. So as we know, Isotope sponsor the show, and we are, in fact, very grateful to them. And we want to tell you about Break Tweaker. Break Tweaker is designed by BT, developed by Isotope. It's not just a drum machine. It's drum sculpting and beat sequencing environment that blurs the line between rhythm and melody. With the eclectic connection of beats, presets and samples, it's easier to add modern feel to compositions. You've got rhythmic slicing to drive everything from pitch melodic lines to sweeping rhythmic overtures. Manipulate audio at a molecular level with the micro editor by controlling pitch, rhythm and texture at the finest resolution. Free yourself from traditional drum grids. Create polyrhythmic and isorhythmic beats with playback and speed settings. Experiment with content. You've got presets, drum samples, wavetables. In fact, BT has given out one of his own personal wavetables, which apparently are quite rare, if that's the sort of thing. You can craft perfect drum sounds. Anyway, if you want to check it out, go to isotope.com/breaktweaker. Now, Breaktweaker is also, you'll be pleased to know, available as a prize on the Sonic Talk competition. But first of all, we've got a winner from last week. Last week's winner is, in fact, now let me have a look here. It's a chap called John Bradley, and his Twitter handle is at B-Dog Design. John Bradley, come in, please. If you get in touch with me, I can let the Isotope Fairy know that you've won and you will get a full copy of Break Tweaker. But if you were thinking, I want to win that, well, you can, because look, here, I've got a competition. You need to be a member of Twitter, or at least join Twitter. You can do it for a bit. You don't have to use it. It's worth doing just for the prize, because the prize is worth a few quid, I can tell you. Win Isotope Break Tweaker. That's right. You need to send a tweet to @SonicNick and @IsotopeInc, and with the hashtag isorhythmic, I thought this week would be an interesting word to put on there. We will then collect all the entries and pick a random winner. Use something called topsy.com, which is a way of searching Twitter, and it gives you an actual count of search results, which is not something that is easy to find, I can tell you. So remember, Isotope Break Tweaker, you can win that for your very own. Tweet @SonicNick and @IsotopeInc with the hashtag isorhythmic, and that could be yours. And this will be the last, well, we won't be announcing a competition for a winner for a little while, because next week's show is going to be pre-recorded, so we're announcing a new competition, but obviously I won't be there to announce the winner. So there'll be this one and another one. The two winners will happen on the next show, which will be Sonic Talk 373, I believe. So do it. Oh, we've lost Gaz again. So let's go to Dave. What's that, Dave? Is that an STS-5?
Oh, sorry, yeah. I'm just reading up about this STS-5. I like the marketing on this. Limited only by your imagination.
Wow.
Or only if you want a sound that goes a lot.
Doof.
Yeah.
Doof, 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 doof. They could actually market it now with the concept of does EastEnders drum fills perfectly. Was EastEnders around at that time? Yeah. I'm not sure if it was. I don't. Gaz is coming back now, so we're obviously having a bit of a bad Skype day with Gaz. I'm sorry, all your chatties and live people who are watching, but that's the notion. Oh, he's come and he's gone. I think he must have some sort of bad bandwidth issue, and I'm not quite sure why that might be. He's there in audio.
I don't know what's going on, Nick. I've got full internet here.
I don't know. It doesn't matter so much, but I suppose we'll just have to live with it. So, you know, don't worry about it. We'll soldier through. I'm sure our listeners will enjoy listening, even though if they can't see your hat. But maybe you'll show up again later. Who knows?
What a mystery.
It is a bit of a mystery. So, yes, next topic. This is, well, check this out. Don't tell anyone. This is a sneaky sort of clandestine. This was supposed to be a test video of the legendary, the fabled Akai Rhythm Wolf. And I mean, you might not be able to hear this over Skype, but it's actually quite got a decent bottom end. This is, I don't know who's doing this, but this is just someone messing around in the pattern. And it's quite bibble bobble, admittedly, but it's got a bit more doof than just regular bibble bobble. And if I now maybe fast forward through it, we can see how complex it gets. I'm not sure whether this records parameters as well. It's hard to tell. It sounds like a CR78, but it's got a baseline track as well. And this apparently is a sort of test video that Akai posted a couple of weeks ago, and it's had 35,000 views. And it's an interesting, I don't know whether or not they haven't pulled it down because they just thought, oh, what the hell, it's, you know, is it going to get any more than that? But this is the fabled Rhythm Wolf. The Rhythm Wolf was actually first appeared at Music Messer. I think I've got the original story here. If we remember, it didn't actually have, I wonder if I can play that without, it might try and throw an ad in front of it. Let's have a look. Yeah, probably will. Doesn't seem to be playing at all. Excellent. I'm having one of there we go.
But yeah, it's got analog bass drum, snare drum.
But it didn't work. So this was synthesizer from Music Messer where I filmed
people
it.
People actually
with,
ask us, like, so what
Dan
is a percussion synthesizer?
And we were under the impression it was coming real soon, but it's actually been very far from coming real soon. But it's an interesting trend because this is yet another kind of low-cost drum machine. My God, Dave Spears, that is an Akai Adam. That's a multi-track recorder, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, the birth of a new age in digital multi-track recording.
Oh, let's have a look at the picture of it. Oh, yeah, God, that's right. It had a control surface. Look at the size of that remote control and that huge... huge rack mount thing. What did it record onto? Was it drives or tape?
No, I think it was tape, wasn't it? Yeah, I think it was tape.
I wonder what the locate speed was like.
Might have to get one of those.
Yeah, it looks nice. I bet you could get it fairly cheaply. So what do you think about this all this Akai Rhythm Wolf business then, Dave? Hello?
I wasn't keen on that video. I mean, the sounds, I have to say.
I don't know what I was expecting.
After the OP1, I was like, the OP1 sounded all really cool, and then this was just kind of, it all went backwards again. But, hey, I don't know, you know, it's a kind of, that was obviously a leaked video of sorts.
Sort of leaked, but you'd imagine they'd have pulled off. It's still listed as private, but it's not. Someone found it and posted it, and so it's, you know, it's been doing the rounds. I don't know if we, I think we might have posted something. Hate to miss out on any news, obviously, but... I don't know, I quite like the look of it, but I don't know whether... Because, I mean, it's very similar in many ways to the Volca, which is, I don't know, because you were quite keen to check the Volca out, but that's even more bibble bubble and not really very very weighty at all. Oh, that's not you. That's you there.
Yeah, no, tricky. I'd need to hear it in more detail. I really would, but at the beginning I was kind of like, sounds a bit like a, like you're saying, a DR55 or something like that.
Yeah, I suppose so. Right, so Gaz. Gaz is there as a disembodied head floating in space at the moment because his video's vanished. But, you know, we've been waiting quite a long time for Rhythm Wolf stuff. I wonder what the hold-up is because they seemed like they were very close at the show, but I wonder if they were fibbing.
There was rumours going on that it was just an empty box that they were showing at the show, that there wasn't any components inside it at all, and that it was rushed out just to kind of... just to steal some of Roland's thunder with the IRA.
Well, it's possible. Yeah, that's a theory. I mean, it seems like you'd have to kind of get everybody on board on message saying that kind of stuff. And I'm sure, you know, people would be kind of fairly uncomfortable saying that sort of thing on the record if it wasn't true. Oh, we've lost Gaz again. I don't know what's going on. Dave.
Gaz.
Gonna have to say something. Gaz has got a bad network day, and it's usually so great.
It's a bit flaky here as well, actually.
Oh dear. Do you think there's some bad internet traffic? Maybe there's thunderstorms somewhere in the world.
Well, yeah. The wind has really picked up here, probably because we bought a new garden furniture set, but that's completely by the by. That'll make it rain now for the next 3 months.
Right, well, we don't seem to be having much luck with any of... No, Gaz is definitely offline. I'm not quite sure what's happening there. And we've kind of come to the end of that. But it is interesting. I mean, I don't know when the projected actual release date for the Rhythm Wolf is, because obviously we were told that it was going to be fairly imminent at the show at Music Messe, and obviously it hasn't. So either maybe there's been some other things that have sort of pushed it out of the way, because obviously you only have limited resources as a manufacturer to kind of get things finished. The team maybe had to work on other stuff. I mean, we just don't know. But, I mean, that's going to be a problem if the PO1 comes out, because the PO1 sounds much more sort of harder and more now. And it's just a question of timing, because everyone went crazy for the Volca, and the Volca Beats isn't really all that fabulous. Sorry, Gaz, you can try and join us now.
Yeah, it's a mystery. Yeah, I just tried streaming a HD video. I've got perfect internet here, so not sure what's going on.
Well, we've got good internet here as well, I think. I don't know. Well, I'm sorry about that, Gaz.
Okay. So I think just picking up on what you were saying there, that it may have been brought out a little bit early for sort of hype reasons. But
yeah, entirely possible.
It's great to see, though, at the same time, that another major manufacturer is kind of building devices like this.
And with some analog componentry to it, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so, you know, I think it gets, even if it doesn't sound that great, I think it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I quite like it. I mean, it is very much of the time. I mean, it's not going to be doing Lindrum sounds. I mean, it's an analog machine, isn't it? So that's the kind of, you know, thing that you have to go up against. And obviously, a direct A-B comparison between something that's digital, where you can throw samples in it and get kind of contemporary now sounds, is bound to be, you know, a poor comparison, really, isn't it?
So, yeah, but I think before it actually drops and we get our hands on it, I don't really want to be too negative about it, but for me a key thing to how successful it'll be would be how well its pattern mode works and how easy it is to chain and to build songs on it, because things like the Volca, you just can't, can you? You can't really, can you, has it got a full song mode?
I have no idea. There's no information about it whatsoever. I mean, this, but you know, yes, it would be good to have that.
Sorry, the question was, does the Cork Volca have a song mode on it? I seem to remember that.
Yes, I think it does have pattern switching. I think it does. But it's very, I mean, the problem is with that, it's very kind of basic, to be honest. I mean, it doesn't. There was issues with things like the balance between the kick, snare and hat and stuff, and you couldn't very easily get a kind of decent level without either turning everything down to meter. I can't remember which way around it was, but it was the gain structure was all a bit off on it as well, which made it harder to use.
Because I used to love sequencing on my 606. I could build real complex songs up with patterns of varying beat lengths and make really quite amazing arrangements with it. So that's what I'd like to see on these devices more, maybe, is a little bit more of song mode And like, if you could take a tip of Electron and mix song mode and parameter lock in, you know.
Yeah.
Great. You know, then,
let's have a look.
Then it, yeah, because to make it better than a computer, or to make it more desirable than working with a computer, it really has to offer a lot, I think, you know.
Let's see. This is the product page on Akai Pro. It says five voice analog drum machine and synth, thick analog drum sounds, kick snare, open and closed hi-hat, metallic percussion, 32-step sequencer with classic drum machine workflow, gate trigger in out for your sequences via modular synths, a howl knob with custom distortion, which we didn't hear, six calibrated MPC style pads for sequencing and finger drumming, a dedicated audio outputs for percussion and bass synth. You can upgrade, you can get, sign up for upgrades, updates rather, so they'll send you information and presumably you'll be on the mailing list, which incidentally we have our own mailing list now. You can join it too. I found a way of doing mailing lists that doesn't cost an absolute fortune, but that's a by the by. So yeah, it doesn't say exactly how sequency it is, so I can't really tell. It doesn't say anything about MIDI, it doesn't say anything about any of that stuff, so it's hard to know whether it's going to fulfill those criteria at all. And I think,
is there a projected price for this?
Yeah, I think in our story, let me see, it was going to be $199. So that's okay. Going to be cool. Somewhere between 100 and 150 quid, something like that, isn't it, I guess?
Yeah, shops have got it listed at £159.
Okay, well, that's going to have the VAT to it as well. So I suppose that's inevitable, really. Yeah. Well, anyway, I mean, you know, I guess if you hook this up with, you could have a whole kind of portable toy style band, I suppose, because I mean, these are this is the low cost. I know it looks like it could be fun, but we would like to hear some more better stuff, and hopefully Akai will actually have the resources to get it finished. I'm guessing they're not going to bother now until music till now. I mean, what would be the point in releasing it unless you get it out before Christmas? I suppose might make sense,
Christmas
mightn't it?
Market.
Yeah. Christmas market, impulse buy.
Yeah.
Of course, Akai have been showing some of the MPC 1.7 software recently as well, haven't they?
Yeah, they've been doing going great guns on the controller side as well, haven't they?
So it looks like that's really developing into quite an attractive. It's coming closer into door territory as well. So I'm interested to see that because it looks like the MPC sort of world and the Native Instruments machine world are sort of they're slightly, you know, they're in competition with each other. So
yeah,
I like that because I think it's going to push both of them to, you know, hopefully.
Yeah, well, innovation, as we've seen with the way that Cubase has just really sort of, as we've talked about before, the way the last maybe 2 years, 18 months, Cubase features have just gone really sort of like, wow, that's a really good idea, you know. So it does take a bit of pressure to kind of get people thinking outside the box, as it were. And I think that's probably something that needs to happen, certainly when you've got these kind of micro door within a door sort of scenario. I mean, when I reviewed the M-Audio Trigger Finger Pro, you know, that environment felt very sort of early in its release. But hopefully, you know, these sort of iterations will start to be seen in, you know, coming down the product chain. So, yes, I agree. It's good. It's got to be good news.
Yeah.
Okay. let's see. What else we got? Does anyone do chip tunes? Does that sort of does anybody have any experience with that? I know that the audience wanted it, but I don't personally make them. I guess Mark wasn't here, so it was his topic. So maybe we could go to the Pyro board because that is awesome. Got to see this. Check it out. He said, hoping that it would actually play. Doesn't seem to though. Ah, there we go. Here it comes. This is I don't know how you pronounce that. Art show presentation of the Pyro board. Pyro board uses this. Have I got no audio? Oh, come on. Now what's going on? Is everything really broken?
The internet's broke.
Everything's just broke. Go on then. Ah, there we go. Here it comes. So it's basically gas fired through tubes with sound pumped through it, and it creates these really interesting effects, and it's called the Rubens tube effect. So you can put various different bits of music through it. You can put, let's see. And you get these beautiful... Oh. Wait till the bass kicks in. It's going to... It's bound to happen at a bar junction coming soon. 3, 4. Interesting stuff. This is now this is where it gets kind of hard. Yeah, this is basically the guys that made this are, as far as I know, they're based in the Institute of. Now I had some notes on this. I'm just trying to find it, which I seem to have lost, and that's all in Finnish by the looks of things. But basically, these guys do a travelling show, and they are. Science show, and they made the pyro tube as a variation on the Rubens tube, which has a very interesting principle, which when you put, you can actually reflect the shape of a waveform. If you put gas and sound through a tube with apertures at the top, you get these beautiful shapes happening. I mean, it looks like the sort of thing that you'd love to see live, though perhaps only in a venue which had very, very good health and safety record. I know. Fancy seeing that, Dave? I mean, if you could do it with that sort of...
Best patio heater ever.
Or a fire pit.
For the smokers out the back of the pub, it's just like, right, and here you go. Because it's always cool hanging out the back with the smokers. So, and you're going to make it even doubly cool. I want one. And I hate patio heaters. I hate all of that kind of stuff. But I want one of these. In fact, I want two of those. I want that big square one and I want the big pipe one.
Yes, Azia had said you in the chat room you could grill your steak in a kind of musical pattern as well. That'd be quite interesting. You could have it interesting. And it's DL Sip says Aarhus University in Denmark. Thank you for correcting me there. I'm sorry. I thought I had some notes here, but they seem to have vanished. So it's just one of those technical. It's probably a good job we're having a holiday, really, because then you'll just take a break from this awful unprofessionalism on my part. But I can't say anything about the network. I know, Gaz, this is the sort of thing. This sort of thing I expect you might have seen at a festival that you've been attending in the during the summer, right?
I'd love to have seen it at a festival. I think it's fascinating. I was very into those things they were doing with rice years ago.
What's it called? Making... something tropic, isn't it? The water stuff and water.
And the patterns change as the frequency changes.
They had that gloopy stuff, didn't they? Gloopy liquid.
What's it called? Underwater acoustics. Now, it's got a special name. I'm just trying to look. Sound and water experiment. Water sound waves. Here we go. Let's see if we can find this. This is the sort of thing. Oh, that doesn't sound very nice, but... I'll turn that down a bit. Let's see what happens. So, yeah, that's that sort of notion, isn't it? That similar kind of principle, but this is sound through water. Wow. That would probably be a little easier to run past the fire officer at any venue, wouldn't it?
Only have you seen the one with rice, though, when they sprinkle rice on a plate? Rice Residence, I think, calls it up. And it's amazing. When I first saw it, I just thought, wow, that's Secrets of the Universe being revealed.
This one here, is this it?
Yeah. So at certain frequencies, it just forms these incredible patterns.
Oh my, yeah. And it's then, got a name, hasn't it? I can't remember what it's called.
Skip it on a little, Nick.
Whoa. Oh.
And they get more complex.
It's like crop circles, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess that's probably to do with the resonance of the metal more than anything else, perhaps. Because the metal plate is going to be... look at that. Even higher. Lordy. God, this is going high. This is testing not only my hearing, but the quality of the MP3 encoding. Yeah, I can't hear that anymore.
And YouTube's algorithms.
Yeah, absolutely. Gaz has gone. Obviously, that frequency must have been one of the ones that just kind of turned... Oh, no, I've started it off again. I don't want to do that. Started off again. Yeah, it's a great idea, though. I like the idea of using fire and all of those things. I know Mark would be very thrilled at the notion of that. It's the sort of, I mean, it reminds me, you know, those kind of like things that used to get in the 80s and 90s, like oil on water and lava lamps and things. It sort of feels like there should be that kind of thing in the home, you know, lighting based on these resonant frequencies and stuff. It could be quite interesting. Obviously not if you had it, you know, you don't want to be listening to it in the background the whole time, a 1 kHz modulating sine tone, but somebody's got to do something, haven't they, surely?
I think it's a great idea. I love it. I really love that. It was that gloopy substance that you mixed water with.
Oh, thixotropic, like corn flour, that sort of thing.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And then you put that over a speaker and fed it in. I was actually pretty hell-bent on doing a video for a band using that stuff, but it all turned into a bit of a mess and I got a bollocking from the missus for messing up the kitchen.
Oh.
I was trying to do it. But I really like that idea. Love that. And that rice thing is amazing. But like you say, it's probably to do with the kind of resonant properties of the material it's on.
There's also that guy. There's also that guy. Is it Simon Clark? Who did the Body Riddle? Who's that guy? Simon Clark. Is that his name? I'm not sure, because he now does this. I'm just searching for it, because he now. Yeah, he does. He now creates videos based on oscilloscopes. So he creates these just amazing. He sends sound in time with the music he does into these oscilloscopes and creates these beautiful, sort of captivating animations. Who was it? Body Riddle. Was it Body Riddle? I can't remember what his name is now. Body Riddle Clark. Chris Clark. That's who it is. Let me see if I can find that, because it's a very similar kind of notion. Chris Clark scope. And I'm just... here we go. Super scope. Here we go. I play a bit of this. This will really get the police going. Like 4 seconds. I can skip it.
Yeah, I know, but they've been making parachutes.
So, yeah, he just puts this music on and just films, and it's just... I don't know how the hell he makes them make those shapes. It just looks incredible, doesn't it? It's really astonishing. So I can't stop looking at it. That's amazing. Same sort of notion, I suppose. And I guess you can do the same thing with... YouTube Police says that in the chat room. Always stop that at once. Oh, no, busted. Busted in the chat room as well. That's terrible. Thank you, chat room, for ingesting some humour into the proceedings, because I'm struggling to actually get any of the stuff to work. Brilliant. That's brilliant. Well, we lost Gaz again. I don't know quite what's happening. I'm guessing he might be about to reboot his router or something like that. There was this other thing as well. Maybe if we look at that, we can think about what Gaz can contribute when or if he ever comes back. This was the interesting discussion on Synthtopia. He put an open mic topic, which he does every once in a while, and kind of encourages people to kind of contribute. Has electronic music lost track of the future? And the sort of thrust of it is essentially that electronic music used to be very much of the future. You know, it was like this sort of like, wow, totally futuristic sound and everything was kind of possible. And now, interestingly, it's sort of kind of flipped and reversed almost. So it's no longer futuristic. It's almost retro, which is a very different kind of completely negative opposite of what it originally was like. And it was just an interesting kind of riffing on that whole idea. I don't know what you think. I mean, you were there with all your brochures, Dave. I mean, you must have an opinion on that, because I mean, that back then, that's when those things were, it was very futuristic and really kind of like, wow, you can do this with technology. And now, to a degree, we've sort of become rather neutral to it.
I find this subject really fascinating. And it was interesting that they used Jean-Michel Jarre quote, because fairly recently I was in Paris. First time I million years ago, I went to Paris in the 70s, and we stayed at Montparnasse, you know, and I don't know whether you've seen the Montparnasse Tower, but in the 70s, that was this kind of beautiful, shining, monolithic beacon of the future skyscraper type thing. And I went to America in the kind of late 70s as well, and that was the future, and everything was bright and rosy. And I'm wondering whether it's a generational thing, whether as we get older and slightly more cynical, the future stops. It becomes a bit dystopian, doesn't it? And we've seen all of those kind of movies. And now I find that when I go to Paris, I gravitate to really old, beautiful, warm buildings, and places like Montparnasse look a bit kind of tarnished.
And the Pompidou Centre,
I think there's
yeah.
an element of that that can translate to music as well. You kind of think, well, you know, I don't know. It's a bit like cars, in that cars have all become very homogenised, and actually I find there's a beauty in cars that I loved as a kid. And it's very much like I can't really give too much away, but I'm doing something where I'm exploring some old synthesizers, and I'm talking to people about old synthesizers, and they're saying about the first time that they encountered these magnificent instruments, they felt like a child. And I know that from driving around in my DS. All of these kids look at it and kind of go, "Dad, Dad, look at that car," which is sort of slightly embarrassing for me as a driver, but I like that, that beautiful naivety, as it were. And I find that I don't get that now when I look to the future, because actually sometimes, and I don't really want to be negative or grumpy, because it's rare that I'm accused of being grumpy, but sometimes the future doesn't look particularly bright, whereas, and it's very easy to kind of find nostalgia in the past. But what I absolutely love is a hybrid of the two. Something really kind of forward-thinking, but with this whiff of nostalgia about it. That's what really excites me, that you kind of go, oh, I can almost taste that and smell that. And, yeah, it's something that's not, that is visceral, but I can't, it's not tangible, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think I understand what you mean. Gaz, I don't know if you know, we moved on to the topic about the discussion on Synthtopia about the thought of electronic music in previous decades has been a thought of the future, very futuristic, and now is kind of reversed. It's almost very retro, and that was what Dave was just commenting on.
I agree with Dave's sentiments entirely. But it's funny though, because I've been listening to Tomita's the Planets, his version of Holst the Planets, and parts of it still sound incredibly futuristic to me, even though it's still got that old sort of sound to it. It still sounds very futuristic as well.
I know what you're saying.
Lovely.
It's interesting what you were saying there about Dave, about how technology was seen as a kind of, I think maybe part of it is that technology has so much now become a tool of authority and ways to sort of monitor us, and you know, and being used in military and all of those things. And not that it has never been so, but it just feels like more and more technology has moved, and the applications of it back maybe in the 70s and 80s were artistic, I suppose. Lots of it was being applied to creative computing and creative music making and what have you, whereas now, you know, it's not quite so, because it's sort of more generic, and computing is seen in many different ways by different people, so it doesn't have quite the same sort of firm dividing line between one or the other. Maybe that's part of it. But there's some really interesting comments in Synthtopia. No one wrote, people said similar things about rock and roll and hip hop and early electro when it came out, and also history's full of examples of early pioneers of every style of music who were dissed by a community who didn't understand their work, and some people even said that Jimi Hendrix was not playing a guitar but making noise. But there, and also another one here, which is because it's become what he thinks has become. Hold on, let me see if I can zoom it in so you can read that. This is Freakbox, who says it's what's great is it's actually become part of a kind of the lexicon of music. Whereas, you know, join things like the violin and various other things. So it's become normalised to a degree, and that's one of the reasons why it's not so timeless. And again, I suppose another reason would be it's become much more available to the mass, to the masses. You know, everybody can enjoy electronic music, create electronic music on their phone or on their whatever. So, I mean, it's not quite so, ooh, look, there's this rich millionaire who's creating this amazing stuff with his unique vision. It's also that as well. So I wonder if it's a combination of all those things, but it's certainly an interesting discussion. Excuse me.
It's like the steampunk stuff, you know, because that's very, it's kind of future, but with this retro sort of vibe. I like that. That's the kind of thing where I kind of go, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That kind of turns me on a little bit. in a normal kind of way.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that maybe what's taken its place is visual, it's CGI, it's graphics, it's things that will make us suspend our belief and we think, blimey, look, you know, so we could treat a picture like this and put all sorts of things going on in the background that weren't actually there. And that's where we are, we become so used to amazing audio things that they're no longer amazing, whereas the other, you know, our visual sense is now the thing that needs to be stimulated to create this idea of futurism. And we indeed, that's what we do, you know, all this range of sci-fi films and, you know, films with monsters and stuff that don't actually exist, we can make them seem real. It's the same sort of...
I think so, but I also think, the big change is communication. In a way, when we were kind of younger and we were looking to the future, everything was sort of shrouded in mystery and there was this sort of almost unattainable aspect to it. You know, it's like, oh, one day things will be like that. But now, I think with communication, all these kind of barriers have been totally broken down and now people discuss things and dissect things to the nth degree until actually there's not a lot of mystery behind an awful lot of things. And it's really... It's fascinating, actually. I've been working with people who only at the minute choose to work with youngsters because they don't bring any of this baggage, particularly in terms of pigeonholing things, like I've said before, in that when somebody plays something, it's like, oh, that sounds like. And in order to kind of get rid of that and to become excited, so say, for example, the guitarist picks up his Gibson Les Paul that he's been kind of bored with over the years, the youngster will go, oh, I've never actually touched a Les Paul. Could you play this? Could you play that? And it's that element of, and I think in a way that's a kind of generational thing in that we've, you know, as the older we get, the slightly more jaded we become.
And the more familiar we become with just cultural references. Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yes.
Something I noticed at... Actually, a couple of festivals I've been in recently where there's been DJing, you know, maybe in the past, those kind of DJs would have been playing kind of old 60s records or maybe some 70s stuff. It seemed like the older stuff I was hearing at this festival was 80s stuff.
Right.
And... But it was really interesting because I walked past this big thing that was going on, instantly recognised the intro chords to Money for Nothing by Dire Straits, and it's got this big build-up and the drums. And then when the guitar solo, a guitar riff, you know, there, everyone's just... And they were all like, wow, all these youngsters, and they were like raving away. And I just thought, blimey. You know, they didn't have any,
no preconception. It was new. Yeah, it was new, I suppose. That's interesting. Yeah. Because, I mean, at the time, it was seen as very cheesy and, you know, has been for.
But it was good.
It's interesting. That's an interesting observation, that. And I suppose that's the thing. I mean, Guga, I think, in the chat... No, Rance, in the chat room, if I can get it before it goes past, said... So, riffing on that, so futuristic equals abstract and uncommon. Is that perhaps what it is? I mean, maybe that's what it is. And because, as you were saying, Dave... Because we've seen a lot and heard a lot, and we've always, and I think it's part of the human condition, isn't it, to always try and associate one thing with another. It's the same way that when you go to a new city, you see lots of new faces and you think, oh, is that, that looks a bit like, is that, you know, I mean, I do anyway, and you're always looking for familiar faces. And you do the same thing when you're talking about music and sounds and things. You're looking for terms of reference. And because we are older and therefore have more of them, it's just something that naturally that we do. That's an interesting thought.
Definitely. Absolutely, definitely. Yeah.
So what we need is...
And I'm really enjoying actually working with a lot of these younger guys. For starters, they are clever. And it's funny because, you know, I'm talking of like 22, 24-year-olds and late teenagers, actually. And it's interesting because amongst... I've always lived slightly outside of the norm, I think, of my generation. And a lot of parents that I speak to, you know, it's all very kind of easy to diss the younger generation. Whereas actually, in my recent experience, they have challenged a lot of my views and made me think about things in a different way, which I find really inspiring. And I'm looking at them kind of going, what does the future look like for you? What does it sound like to you? And because they come at it from, like we were saying, you know, without these kind of preconceptions and any of this baggage, it's actually really stimulating for an old git like myself.
That's really interesting. So essentially, you know, what I mean, this is, I mean, it's not very music technology, but it's an interesting, because sort of if you think of the creative spirit of an age or of a generation, certain things will have bad, you know, like, oh no, that's cheesy. Whereas, you know, like you were saying, Gaz, when you were at a festival, these a lot of the kids that were dancing, that they had no, there was no concept of that Dire Straits track being cheesy or commercial or whatever in any way. It was just good. So does it mean that what we're actually doing is, as a culturally, just distilling all the good stuff so that that floats to the top and still sticks out, or rather than just having all this other reasons for liking or not liking something or choosing a certain sound or a riff over another one? That's
There was another thing I was at, and the DJ was playing early 90s kind of dance hits. Papua New Guinea by Future Sound of London had just come on. It's just like, ah, amazing. So it was really interesting because this is like 20-year-old music. And hearing it played out loud in this festival, they did sound really fresh, and they sounded really, I don't know, I mean, for me, I was kind of getting a nostalgic element from it, but they still sounded good. So this idea of things filtering,
floating up to the top. But I suppose, you know, you could look at it and from another point of view, which would be, well, is it down to, you know, the cynic might say, well, it could be down to the fact that there is actually less innovation, and because there's so much stimulation, we're being lazier. You know, perhaps some of our younger kind of creative spirits are being lazier because they just pick the first thing, and they're maybe following a much shorter term of reference. Because, I mean, as we know, you know, in classical music, any the study of any art, you know, one of the things that is tended to be thought of as what you must know is the history and the whys, and certainly in design and all sorts of other creative disciplines, that you should know this history stuff. But in fact, you know, from what you were just saying, Dave, that shouldn't be the case. You know, maybe that shouldn't be. Maybe if you just draw a line and kind of go, right, from here, do what you think is better. It's interesting. There's two arguments there, really, isn't there? Dave's frozen.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I find in a lot of sort of modern contemporary music. Sorry, am I there?
Yes, you are.
Yeah, no, I find in a lot of kind of modern popular music, contemporary music, that I'm bored now of this kind of harking back to the past. And I do believe that that's probably a producer situation who's probably of our generation, who's kind of going, well, you know, actually demographically, it's the 40 to 55-year-old housewives that are going to buy this tune, and they like this particular track when they were growing up, so we're going to do it in this style. And I find that that's becoming, I'm becoming very cynical towards that. Whereas actually younger people left to their own devices generate a lot more stimulating stuff for me.
Right, okay. Sorry, Gaz, you were coming in there as well.
A friend of mine, he's a mixed race guy and working in a studio in Bute Town in Cardiff, which is a very sort of multiracial area. And he said to me once, the big difference between the black kids and the white kids, or maybe not so much white and black, but certainly the ones who are into the kind of urban R&B and hip hop, whatever, don't have any reverence for older musicians or older. They're not interested. They're just interested in new sounds and reacting to things that they're hearing. Whereas a lot of the kind of maybe guitar-y, sort of maybe white kids or whatever, they've got all this reverence for these musicians of the past. And it was just an interesting point that he was making. He was saying that he felt that that was something that if you were just to assess what is the difference in different kind of social circles, obviously these can't make any generalizations, but I thought it was quite interesting because a lot of the kind of urban dance music and that whole, well, it's a massive, massive area, but thrives on just taking what's around, absorbing it,
mashing it up and chucking something else out.
Yeah, I'm just constant. Whereas like guitarists, maybe they're kind of listening to Cream and Led Zeppelin. And even now, I mean, you know, a 17-year-old guitarist is still going to be fixated on that glorious era of late 60s, early 70s kind of rock music. But yeah, I just...
I think that's also an interesting point. Well, that feels like quite a philosophical and interesting way to end the show, perhaps. I know we haven't really got all that much more to talk about, so it feels like it's probably a good time to stop. And the technology is holding up, so we can say goodbye to everybody and they will be able to hear and see me, hopefully. But I want to say thank you to everybody in the chat room for your contributions, and we do appreciate you being there. I'm glad we got the chat room software working a bit better. We've got a much higher count in there this week, so thank you very much, everybody. Also want to say again, thank you very much to our sponsors. And don't forget that you can, have I still got the, yes, you can win a copy of, oops, no, that's not what I want. I want that one. Press the button. Oh, everything's slowed down. There we go. Break Tweaker. You can win Break Tweaker this week. We won't be announcing the winner for a couple of weeks. You just need to get on Twitter and you tweet out the hashtag isorhythmic to @SonicNick and @IsotopeInc, and we will pick a winner probably in a couple of weeks' time, and there will be another competition from next week's recorded show. There is no show next week, remember, so just do bear that in mind, so everybody's got the time off. So I want to say thanks to my guests for joining me as well and sticking with me with the slight technical difficulties. We've got Dave there. Dave's looking... Ah, the classic Boss CE1 chorus pedal. That really is a very special piece of metal right there, isn't it?
There it's amazing, it is. Isn't it? Can't believe I've kept that. It's in absolutely beautiful condition. There you go.
That'd be worth a fortune. People pay a lot of money for that sort of thing. We glossy literature. You can't have it. You're going to keep it. You're going to start framing them and putting them on the walls.
Fine.
Anyway, Dave Spears, G4 Software, thank you very much for joining us. Hope you enjoy the rest of your week, day, August. And thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Have a good holiday.
Yes, I certainly hope I do. Although I did look and it was rain, but that doesn't matter. It's the break that counts. And of course, Gaz Williams there in Bristol, thank you very much for joining us too and battling through the network issues. I still don't know if it's you or I, but thank you for joining us, Gaz. It's been great to have you.
Yeah, just a quick mention. If anyone happens to be at the Green Man Festival, which is from the 14th to the 17th of August, I'm going to be performing... a live soundtrack to the old classic The Endless Summer, the surf film from that was filmed in 1964, came out in 1966. But my group, The Rumbelows, we've written a brand new soundtrack for it. So we're going to be performing that on the Saturday in the cinema tent. So that's been taking up a lot of time now, just in the last couple of weeks, getting that ready. That's it's a beautiful film, and it's the latest remastered version that we're going to be playing to, which I don't think has been seen publicly.
It's very... Actually, if I remember, isn't that very much what the High School Musical kind of genre of films was based on, that kind of whole surf holiday thing? So in many ways, it's also very contemporary at the same time as being very retro.
Well, it's the film isn't like a drama. It's just... It purely just follows a couple of surfers as they... As they go around the world, they go to Africa and surf in front of some people who've never seen it before. And I've just written a little feature about it on my blog. So if anyone's interested, pop along to
gazwilliams.me. There it is. You can check it out. Anyway, Gaz, thank you very much for joining us, and thanks for letting us know about that. And I encourage people to get over there and read your stuff and see you play live, because you are a joy to watch. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, yes, that's it for another week. As I say, no live show next week, though I do have a pre-recorded interview with Roger Lynn, talking about the Linstrument and the development of that and all his other kind of business. Interesting fact about Roger Lynn, I didn't know. He co-wrote in 1979 a song with Eric Clapton. There you go. Didn't know that. That's a fact to leave you with. And while you possibly think about that and digest it. I shall see you later. Thanks very much. Bye.